It's time for episode 544 of the Clockwise Podcast from Relay FM, recorded Wednesday, March 6, 2024. Clockwise, four people, four tech topics, 30 minutes.
Welcome back to Clockwise, your default 30-minute tech podcast. Well, unless you're in the EU, then you have a choice. I am one of your hosts, Micah Sargent, and I'm back, baby. And joining me across the internet is my good pal, friend, and noted author, Dan the Man Morin. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing well, Micah, and I'm so happy you're back. I've missed you over the past few weeks.
I've missed you.
I can finally kick back and relax. You're here to run the show, so
that's
I'll
how
be over
we do
here
it.
Drinking my coffee and putting my feet up.
Sounds good. Well, while Dan precariously props his feet and hopefully doesn't fall out of his chair, introduce our awesome guests. To my left, partner at Lickability and host of the wonderful, absolutely crushed podcast, it's Matthew Bischoff. Welcome back to the show.
So good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And to my left this week, it is the co-host of Primary Technology, Stephen Robles. Welcome back, Stephen.
Pleasure to be here again. Thanks for having me.
All righty. Well, you all know how this works. We've got four topics in just 30 minutes. Here is mine for you all. My question is this. How important is encryption to you in terms of the service or services that you use to send messages? So how much do you think about the encryption or don't think about the encryption? And based on your thinking or not thinking about the encryption, do you choose which service to use to send messages? Matthew, we'll start with you.
I do think about it a lot, and I've thought about it a lot more recently as I've been getting more politically active, attending more protests and direct actions. So when you're organizing with folks around that, there's often a lot of concern around OPSEC and security in general and using encrypted messaging platforms. So in most cases, I try to, when I'm talking about that kind of stuff, be on Signal, use iMessage for most of my other communications. And so at this point, there aren't very many places where I'm having unencrypted conversations.
Post-quantum or bust is my encryption motto. You know, it's funny. I don't worry about it primarily because I rely on iMessage, and that, you know, Apple has offered end-to-end encryption for iMessage for a long time. Obviously, there has been the iMessage backup loophole, but you can activate the advanced data protection and basically close that. I tend not to use, like, the only other messaging stuff I use is either, like, Slack, Discord, or, you know, on some occasions, social media DMs. And those often are just, like, I don't do anything sensitive on those because I'm aware, like Mastodon, for example, the messages there are not encrypted. They're not really, like, they're private in the sense that other people don't see them in their timelines, but they can be accessed by other people. So those are things where it's just like, hey, I want to send somebody a note that I don't want to broadcast, like, for everybody. And if I need to move it to a, you know, a more secure channel, I'll do that. But a lot of times I'm comfortable with the level of privacy it's given me. And if I need something that's more than that, I won't use that. So I think iMessage in some ways has spoiled me in that way because it's so good, and I tend to use it for almost all of my messaging. But, you know, it's certainly something I think about. I'm a security enthusiast, which is to say I'm not smart enough to be a security professional, but I like reading about it and understanding it. So I was very gratified to see Apple's post-quantum security measures that they've implemented in the most recent releases, because I love the idea that they're thinking ahead to these challenges that, like, hey, they're not here yet, but they're going to be here soon, and we need to start protecting ourselves from these things now. So to me, that is a great move, and it's something that makes me feel very confident in it. Stephen, what about you?
I guess I have a more boring take. I rarely think about this, honestly, and maybe it's because a majority of my texts are like, yes, I got Chipotle, headed home. And if those ever leak, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But I do like hearing the iOS 17.4, the post-quantum encryption for iMessage. I had tried other services like Signal when I thought, you know, maybe some Apple leaker will randomly text me anonymously. But I found I just have enough cognitive load for basically iMessage and Slack. I can't do any more than that. You know, I try to do some Discord and not crazy about just how that app works and having multiple messaging apps. It just doesn't comport with my daily workflow and what I need to communicate with. So I like knowing that it's secure and encrypted. But if my entire iMessage history leaked, I think there would be zero scandalous occurrences from that.
I almost exactly agree with Stephen and feel the same way. Although perhaps I've got far more scandalous things. I think that when it comes to, iMessage, also feel a little spoiled, like Dan was saying, and am happy that, Apple is one of a few that are thinking about a potential quantum computing reality. I found it really chilling. I didn't realize that, and I guess I should have, there are many nation states and others who are holding on to encrypted data, just waiting for quantum computing to reach a level at which they can then go back and look at all of this encrypted data that they already have. Yeah, exactly. That is wild to me. So when you ask, like, okay, if there's a chance that quantum computing might never become a thing, and that actually is a good chance, then why even worry about creating encryption that is, you know, prepared for quantum computing, especially since it's not ready yet? And that is why, because there are groups that are holding on to this data for that post-quantum world. So glad that it's happening. But yeah, I don't really pay attention to it so much. I just know that it's happening in the background when it comes to iMessage, and I'm happy about that. But it was really what you said, Stephen, about cognitive load. I'm the same way. I just don't have much room for a bunch of other places to have people messaging me and for me to actually get back to them. The people who know how they can get in touch with me, and the others have to just kind of, I guess, wait until a day when I feel like browsing that other app or service that it happens to be. Thank you all for your answers to that. Let's go to our next topic, which comes from Matthew.
Yeah, I've been testing a new app web service called Manifold Markets, which is a prediction market. So I used to use Predictit back in the day for this. What it lets you do is bet on outcomes using play money, essentially, that they call mana. So you can bet on, like, the election. You can bet on any type of outcome that you want. But one thing that's new about Manifold's approach is that anyone can post a poll, essentially, or a potential outcome, and you can just let other users bet on it. So it has, like, that user-generated content side of things. I guess my question is, since I have a couple of free abilities to post these things, what would you want to know what the crowds think? What would you want to post in a prediction market to ask the crowd, do you think this would happen or this would happen, and get a sense from people what their opinions are?
So cool.
Wow, I never even knew these things existed, and I feel like I find it very overwhelming, and I'm scared to tell my wife about it because I think she would really enjoy this.
Yeah, it's fun.
I can see it being a little addictive, also depressing as I look at the poll about the election down there. In terms of stuff that I would vote for, I feel like my answers are all very boring about, like, I don't know. Will George R. R. Martin finish the last Game of Thrones book before he dies?
That's a great
or something.
One.
That's a good one, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's potentially some, like, I feel like there would be inconsequential stuff about, like, media, because that's all I really care about predicting. Like, will the Marvel Universe implode? Will they cast somebody as Doctor Doom? I don't know. Those are the things that I kind of want to bet on. Like, the stuff that's too tied to reality. Like, A, I don't care about sports at all, so that doesn't matter to me. The stuff about, like, economics or politics is just too, like, oh, I'm not wonky enough to know those things. Like, I don't want to think about that or predict that. So I'm going to go with inconsequential stuff about media, or maybe some tech related stuff. Like, before this week, maybe will Apple build a car? So that one paid out, I guess. Stephen, what about you? You got any bets you want to place?
I have never, ever heard of this.
This is so cool.
Fascinating. It's fascinating to me. Dan, all your questions, I want polls for now, of course, Dr. Doom and all the Marvel stuff. I did find one here where it says, will Apple increase the free iCloud storage tier over 5 gigabytes by 2030? So this this poll is still 6 years into the future. It says right now there's a 73% chance that Apple will raise it. I think that's a little gracious. I would actually bet against it. I think it'll be 5 gigabytes forever. I do think this is interesting. I might peruse this for some of the takes on AI, especially with the new like Sora video generator from OpenAI, and to see what people think about, will AI generated content like be enough? Like, are people going to feel like just fine consuming that? Will they care if what they're reading or listening to is AI generated versus real humans 10 years from now? And especially from younger audiences, you know, I think people in their 20s, teenagers and younger who, you know, are kind of growing up with this right now. And 10 years from now, we'll be the ones, you know, watching lots of YouTube and stuff like that. I'd be curious there, the temperature of that, you know, will they even prefer real content or what that might look like or what they think it's going to look like? So I might peruse for some of that.
I know what mine is. In 2024, will it be revealed that an A-list celebrity used AI to write their apology note?
So that's a good one. I thought you were going to say, will an A-list celebrity be a guest on Clockwise? Oh. Like, I know where my bet is.
No. Are they going to be using generative AI to write their whatever apology, their mea culpa they have to do? I think there's a good chance, but then there's also not a super good chance. So I think it's worth, betting on. This is so fun. I am really glad that you brought this up, but also not really glad because I think it's going to take up some of my time. Matthew, why don't you run this out here?
I think I would use it probably to do something like Apple rumor stuff. Like, will Apple release a new something in the Apple Vision line before 2027? Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even rumors about my own life. Like, will Lickability release an app in 2024? Things like that. I think would be fun. And I saw some people posting things about like, will this person that I asked out say yes to a date with me? And then people just speculating on people's romantic lives, which I thought was pretty silly.
How fun. Well, while everybody goes to click around on that, stop, because it's halftime. And I do want to tell you about our awesome sponsor, which is Ecamm. Ecamm Live is the leading video production and live streaming studio built for the Mac. Ecamm does all aspects of video, not just live streaming. It's perfect for simplifying your workflow. It's easy enough to get started quickly, but it's powerful enough that you can create just about anything with video, and you can do it all with the Ecamm app. I've talked before about how I've used this in so many different ways. I use it every week on a show called iOS Today that I do. I also had a Dungeons and Dragons campaign that raised money for St. Jude, and that whole thing was run using Ecamm as the kind of live streaming production platform. But what's great about Ecamm is that you don't necessarily have to use it for live streaming. You can also use it to record video. I use it for a show called Hands on Mac that is not live streamed, and each week I sit down, I turn it on, and I get started, I record the video, and I can switch between. It's great. Whether you're streaming, recording, podcasting, presenting, everything is there in Ecamm, including support for multiple cameras and screen sharing and a live camera switcher that lets you direct the show in real time. You can stand out from the crowd with high quality video, add logos and titles and lower thirds and graphics. You can share your screen, drop in video clips, bring on interview guests, use a green screen, and so much more. Ecamm Live does it all. Their members are entrepreneurs, marketing professionals, podcasters, bloggers, content creators of all kinds. So get 1 month free today to give it a try. Ecamm.com/clockwise using the code clockwise. That's a whole month free of Ecamm Live at ecamm.com/clockwise with the code clockwise. Go there now, check it out. And of course, our thanks to Ecamm for their support of this show and Relay FM. All right, we are back from the break, and that means it is time for Dan's topic.
Hello, it's me.
Hi.
This question was spawned by a first-time caller. This question was spawned by Apple's announcement of new M3 MacBooks this week, MacBook Airs this week, which add into them the ability to have two external displays connected with the lid closed. This was a big source of contention for earlier MacBook models, including the MacBook Pros that came out last year. And so it kind of made me wonder, how many displays do you use? Is a multi-monitor setup important to you? Does it influence your buying decisions when you buy a new computer? Stephen, let's start with you.
I am a one-monitor person. I have tried multiple monitors in the past, and you know, even for Final Cut, you know, it'd be nice to have like the full video preview, but I find it more awkward, I guess, just for me personally, to like have to look all the way on a second screen rather than use spaces that's built into macOS. And so that's really how I work. I use multiple spaces all the time. I still full screen applications, even when I'm on my studio display. So when I'm editing in Final Cut, I'll full screen that. And then I have a space kind of to the left where I have my social media apps, messages, mail, Slack, that kind of stuff. And I'll maybe have another space where I have like my notes and things that I'm working on for the video. And I find just a two-finger swipe on the Magic Mouse to go between those spaces, I can work much faster rather than, you know, dragging my mouse what feels like a long journey across two displays, which I know it's probably not like that, but I just rather use multiple spaces on a single display. And I never really want for that second one. Yeah, I'm good with one.
Wow, one display. That is shocking to me as I look at three displays. And here's the thing.
You're like a day trader over there?
Yeah, I originally was only using two displays. I have the studio display, and then for years now, I've owned these Dell ultra sharp monitors that are they're 1610 instead of 1609. And long time ago, I bought two of them to use with a MacBook Pro that I kept in clamshell mode. When I changed to a Mac Studio and got the studio display, I originally just tried using the studio display on its own and needed some more screen because it's how my brain thinks when I sit down. So I pulled out one of those monitors. But then I mentioned earlier during the ad read that I did the St. Jude D&D campaign thing, and I really needed to have that third display to have everything that I needed to properly produce it. And I said, oh, I'm going to pull this out. I'm going to put it, you know, together. I'll do it for the show, and then I'll put it away because I don't need to have three displays. And yes, dear reader, dear listener, I kept it out. I did not put it away because then I suddenly got used to having all of that space. That said, I don't only work in this mode. When I'm using my MacBook Air, I, like you, Stephen, work in spaces and in kind of multiple desktop methods. I can change between the two, but yeah, if I'm sitting down at the Mac Studio, I want to have all the displays, and I do indeed have all the displays. What about you, Matthew?
Yeah, for me, I try to live the multi-monitor lifestyle, but not in a traditional sense. I use the iPad sidecar thing.
Oh, nice.
But then if I end up taking my iPad off the stand or it's not charged or whatever, I'm totally fine with the one monitor. I have a MacBook Pro plugged in clamshell mode. So the extra sidecar is usually where my messages or my Slack window lives. And then everything else is on a big LG ultra fine. And that's totally fine if it's just the big screen. What about you, Dan?
Yeah. I have done the multi-monitor thing in the past when I used to work in like web dev and IT and stuff. Like, we had extra monitors lying around, and so I would set them up because it was like, oh, surely two is better than one. And I appreciated aspects of it. And when I worked solo from a laptop for a long time, I had an Apple Cinema display that I had as an external display. But I kind of agree with Steven's points on this one. I have been single monitor for a long time. I think a big part of it was I was laptop only for a very long time, and I got very used to like even dealing. I was using like an 11-inch MacBook Air, so like I got used to low amounts of screen real estate. And I'm a big fan of spaces. For me, that is the way that I manage my windows and can sort of navigate those. And I use Mission Control / Expose a lot. Apple, you should improve some of those features. They've been sitting fallow for a long time. But I just don't, I mean, part of it is I don't really feel like I have the room. The second part of it is I, you know, like Steven said, I don't want to have to like be looking all over to find my windows or whatever. For me, having everything on one screen and then organizing it into like subspaces works much better for the way that my brain works. So I've never been concerned about how many external displays a computer can drive. It's just not an issue for me. I understand lots of other people is important, but I've been very happy with a single display. I've been using an Apple Studio display for a year now or so, and I really like it. And yeah, you can pry that from my cold dead hands, but I don't feel like I need a second one imminently. Thank you all for your thoughts on that. Let us go to our last topic, which comes from Steven.
So iOS 17.4 released to the public yesterday with some big updates to Apple Podcasts, namely the transcript feature. And so I'm curious, currently, What is everyone's podcast app of choice? And do these updates, or have you ever been tempted to go back and try Apple Podcasts?
I do get tempted to go back and try Apple Podcasts from time to time. And in fact, I sometimes do go back and try Apple Podcasts because it's important to know how many of my listeners slash viewers are sort of seeing and interacting with the shows. So I will from time to time play around with it. I am a Pocket Casts user. I have been for many years at this point. I was originally an Overcast user, and then I met Russell Ivanovich of Shifty Jelly, who is one of the original creators of Pocket Casts. And I remember giving the app a go, and I thought, oh, wow, this is what I want. This is for me. And so from that point on, I've used Pocket Casts. It's because it's got an Android version, an iOS version. I can use it on the web. I can use it on the Mac, even separate from being on the web. And the sync and everything works for me. And basically, all of the way that it's designed clicks with my brain. And because I've been using it for so long, it just is what I always end up going back to, even when I do give Apple Podcasts a try. But I think it's super great that they're doing transcripts. Very excited about that for accessibility reasons, first and foremost, and for searchability reasons, secondarily. Matthew, what about you?
Yeah, I'm also really tempted by the podcast transcripts. In fact, right before the show started, we did a big thread on the Lickability Twitter and Mastodon accounts about the specific animation polish and details of the transcript feature. It's really, really well implemented, so I do want to try it out. But I am a diehard Overcast fan. I used Castro for quite a while back in the day, but eventually switched back to Overcast and have been using Overcast pretty much since then. I also saw recently that Castro changed hands again, so might be worth another look once they have some time to put some more polish into it. But I think the combination of playlists and smart speed and all of the way that Overcast works and the fact that it's on all of my devices and synced is what keeps me using it.
Yeah, I admit that I am an Apple Podcast user and have been one for a long time. Part of that is because I just don't listen to that many podcasts. And so a lot of the features of other apps that are much more targeted about like, okay, here's how you like keep track of everything and organize all your podcast listening. Like I find the Apple Podcast scenario for that is generally pretty good. I've used Overcast in the past as well. It just doesn't fit my brain quite as well. I've tried Castro back in the day too. And I think Apple Podcasts, its simplicity and the integration with the directory is just so solid that for me, I think it's perfectly good. And especially like with all the other integrations throughout Apple's OS, some of which I have problems with, but like it's just easy. And that really appeals to me. I think the transcript feature is excellent. I was trying it out on some of my episodes of podcasts yesterday and was really impressed with how good it is. It got names right. You know, it's got like very good spacing. It tends to do a good job with like even some of the weird crosstalk shows I do. I thought it was really impressive. So I love that's in there. It's certainly a feature that is now kind of one of those things that a lot of those competitors are going to have to figure out how they're going to deal with. And Apple certainly has a lot more resources than a lot of those competitors. So it may be a tricky one to overcome. But yeah, I'm very comfortable with my use of Apple Podcasts and I'll be sticking with it. Stephen, why don't you wrap us up?
So I was definitely a longtime Pocket Cast user and I still think their Mac app and syncing is probably the best. Their Apple Watch app was great. They had special features like adding new episodes of a show to the top of your queue or to the bottom of your next queue, and it was great. But there were some design features that came to Apple Podcasts through iOS 16 and 17 that kind of drew me back, and it took some figuring things out. And I'll offer a couple shortcuts and a tip if you want to try Apple Podcasts and you're coming from Pocket Casts or others, that I'm all in on Apple Podcasts now. And I will say, if you are like a smart speed and remove silence kind of feature user like Overcast has, Apple Podcasts doesn't have an equivalent. And so, you know, obviously Overcast is going to be the answer. But I will say the design, not only of the transcripts, but like I do custom chapter artwork for all of my shows, and the background color of the Now Playing screen changes per chapter artwork, and it also matches with the episode artwork. And the big show art that shows up like on the main tab, which is now the home tab in 17.4, it just looks amazing. And because I listen at 1X and I don't use the other features, it's worked for me. I will say two shortcuts that I use to help transition. One of the features I loved in Pocket Cast was skipping the intro to certain shows. So if you know you have a show that has the same 1 minute intro every time, sometimes you just want to skip it. And so I created a shortcut where it shows a menu. I can choose one of the shows that has those intros, and I've programmed in a seek forward 60 seconds or 120 seconds. And so it'll start playing that episode and immediately skip the intro. And I was able to build that into the shortcuts. And I actually forgot the other shortcut. Maybe I'll remember it in a second. But the one tip I will say is, if you're coming from Overcast or Pocket Cast, it's the hardest transition to Apple Podcasts is figuring out where is your list of new episodes that you're going to listen to, because there's a lot of places you can see them. You can create stations in Apple Podcasts. And so my one recommendation is, if you're trying it out, follow your shows. And it's important to mark all episodes as played for shows that you're adding to your Apple Podcast app, and just mark the last episode as unplayed or any new episode. And then where I go to basically click play on all my podcasts is the latest episodes section. So going to the library, latest episodes, and there you'll see just your unplayed episodes from shows you follow. And I treat that as like my up next list, which might help those trying to come from Pocket Cast or other applications. And it's been great for me. And I still forgot the other shortcut, but if I remember it, I'll let you know. But that's been I'm all in on Apple Podcasts.
Nice. Well, folks, that
great tips.
Yeah, fantastic tips. And with that, we have just enough time for a bonus topic. So my question for you is this, and listen, when the beings that make these things happen hear what you say, don't worry, this isn't the only place that you'll be able to visit. So I know it can be hard to choose one, but you got to choose one. It doesn't mean you can't go to the others. If you could visit any fictional place, which place would you choose? Matthew, we'll start with you.
Deep cut, perhaps, but for Dungeons and Dragons nerds, there is a campaign setting called Planescape. And in that setting, there is a city called Sigil, the City of Doors, also known as the Cage. Yeah. And I played a D&D campaign set there once, and if I could go anywhere, that's where I would go.
That's pretty good. I feel like I'm obligated to pick something from Star Wars, and I'm trying to think of which of those places are nice to be. I think I'd pick.
You want to go to Hoth?
No, not going to Hoth. I hate sand, so I'm not going to Tatooine. Endor seems okay, but I do have some seasonal allergy concerns. I'm going with Bespin. I'm going with Cloud City pre Empire invasion and all of that. I think it has the great Art Deco, and it's just the lighting always seems so good. So there we go.
I will say, I just remember the other shortcut too. I programmed it to skip forward 120 seconds because Apple Podcast maxes out at skipping forward 60 seconds. And I mapped that to my action button so I can skip forward when I'm listening two minutes with the action button. Where I would visit, 100% Rivendell from the Lord of the Rings universe.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like I could just stay there for months and be rejuvenated, and that would be my vacation spot.
Just a rejuvenation. That sounds good.
So right now, there is a little thing going around where someone who may be a scammer or maybe just has no idea what they're doing tried to create Willy Wonka's chocolate factory and did a very, very poor job of it. But I can remember ever since I first saw, I guess it was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Is that the Gene Wilder one? So Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I've always wanted to go to Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, and I would want it to actually be good, not the one that's in the news right now. So that's my
Micah. Have you not watched that movie? It is a death trap.
It seems terrifying.
I know, but I'm a goody two shoes who would follow every rule, so I would be fine. Oh no, now I'm blaming all those victims. I'm sorry. All right, folks, if you would like to get ad-free episodes of the Extra Overtime Topic every week, you can become a member of Clockwise. You just go to relay.fm/clockwise and sign up. It's just $7 per month or more than that per year. We should rewrite this text, and you will help support the show. In this week's Overtime Topic, we discuss the EU's fine against Apple. Folks, that brings us to the end of this episode of Clockwise. All that's left is to thank our awesome guests. Matthew Bischoff, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Micah.
And Stephen Robles, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Micah, so glad once again that you are back and that we will be back next week with more amazing Clockwise action. I don't know where that came from, but there it is. But until then, we remind everybody listening out there, watch what you say.
And keep watching the clock.
Bye, everybody.